This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them. They will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up.
Israel's indiscriminate bombing of the Gaza Strip enters now its 15th day. At least 53 more Palestinians are killed in latest Israeli strikes throughout the besieged territory. Meanwhile, the Hamas resistance movement has released two American female captives on humanitarian grounds. And fresh pro-Palestine protests take place worldwide as anti-Israel sentiments are growing over the regime's war on Gaza. Hello, everybody. Very warm welcome to World News. And now, our top story. More than 2 weeks on since Israel launched its deadliest onslaught on Gaza, and there is no end in sight to the regime's atrocities against Palestinians. At least 53 were killed in Israeli strikes on city's residential areas early Saturday. Earlier, an Israeli air raid killed three Palestinians at Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip, adding to the 20 already killed there Friday. Now, dozens were also injured. Death toll from Israeli aggression has now crossed the 4,100 threshold, with more than 1,000 people missing, presumed under rubble. Meanwhile, the UN chief has visited the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and Gaza in a bid to get aid flowing into the besieged Palestinian territory.
So these trucks are not just trucks. They are a lifeline. They are the difference between life and death for so many people in Gaza. And to see them stuck here makes me be very clear. What we need is to make them move, to make them move to the other side of this wall, to make them move as quickly as possible and as many as possible.
Guterres said trucks carrying international aid for Gaza should be rolling in the next day or so, some 175 lorries filled with vital medicine, food, and water are waiting at the Rafah crossing. Israel has cut off the supply of electricity, water, fuel, and medicine into the besieged territory. According to the Gazan Health Ministry, seven main hospitals are now out of service. UN says more than 1 million of Gaza's 2.3 million people are displaced, with the humanitarian situation beyond catastrophic and deteriorating by the day. And we had breaking news coming in earlier that there are reports that as of 10 a.m. local time, we may see the first truck or trucks being allowed in through that Rafah crossing, but that is anyone's guess if that the Israelis let that happen. Meanwhile, the Hamas resistance movement says it's released two American women that were taken captive in the Gaza Strip. Hamas military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigade, says the mother and daughter were released for humanitarian purposes. Group spokesperson Abu Ubaidah says move proves to Americans and the world claims by the U.S. president and his administration are false and baseless. Abu Ubaida says they are also considering the release of other captured foreigners. A Hamas official earlier said nearly 200 people were taken captive during Operation Al-Aqsa Flood on October 7th. These include high-ranking Israeli military officials. Hamas has suggested captives be swapped for 6,000 Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. The Palestinian resistance groups have launched more attacks against Israel in retaliation for the regime's bombardment of the Gaza Strip. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement, the Al-Qassam Brigades, launched missiles at the city of Tel Aviv. Israeli military positions in East Al-Quds were also targeted. Hamas had previously stated it could target anywhere in occupied territories. The resistance fighters entered the Gaza envelope area October 7th following missile strikes on Israeli targets under Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. At least 1,500 Israelis have been killed and nearly 5,000 injured since then. Hamas says it launched the campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. The Palestinian Minister of Health has called on the international community to protect Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza after Israel orders its evacuation and signed that the facility will be bombed. Mai Al-Qaeda said international community must take swift action to prevent another tragedy similar to that of the Al-Ahli Hospital. That took place after another evacuation order by the regime. Nearly 500 people died there after the hospital was bombed last Tuesday. According to Palestinian officials, Al-Quds Hospital is housing over 400 patients and nearly 12,000 civilians who have taken refuge there. Israel has also notified aid agencies to evacuate 5 schools. And now joining us from Khan Yunis is our own Ashraf Shannon. Hello, Ashraf, checking in again with you for another update, if you could. The regime says, Ashraf, it does not target hospitals. What have you seen on the ground there?
Well, I've seen it with my own eyes. They targeted the entrance to Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, and at least a dozen people were injured a few days ago. And they also targeted the exterior wall of this hospital as well. I saw that too. And I saw that in previous wars when they hit Shifa Hospital, they hit Nasser Hospital, and the Protestant hospital, also known as Al-Ahli Al-Arabi Hospital. And we've seen how many people were killed. Hundreds of people were killed. Shifa Hospital today, overnight, Shifa Hospital received at least 15 rockets outside the hospital itself. But whoever is in there would feel the same loud explosion and vibration and seismic effects as if they were hit by the rockets. They're trying to scare the people inside the hospital to leave it and evacuate it. They have made direct threats to Al-Quds Hospital, which is part of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. They called the general manager and told them specifically to empty the hospital of everyone. They told them to vacate the hospital. They called the people there. They called the IDPs, the internally displaced persons seeking shelter inside Al-Quds Hospital, to leave it. They called hundreds of people. So why would you call someone and tell them to vacate the building because we're going to bomb it, and you say you're not bombing hospitals? And what's the big thing about hospital, honestly? You know, when you kill hundreds of children, over 1,000 children have been killed in 15 days, and maybe 600 or 700 women. What difference does it make if you hit a hospital or you hit children? You know, killing children is as bad as hitting hospitals. So this is a bloodthirsty regime, cancerous entity that has been implanted within West Asia more than 75 years ago with a sole purpose of ethnically cleansing Palestinians, replacing them with immigrants from different countries, trying to control the entire region.
And Ashraf, I have to ask you this. How are you doing? Your family, yourself, I've noticed The last few days, you've been losing weight. I mean, brother, are you okay, and do we need to worry about you?
You don't need to worry about me losing weight. It's just from extra work, you know, but we're burning more calories. Regarding losing weight also, you don't feel like eating. When you stand at night or daytime and you look at, you know, babies torn to pieces, you wouldn't feel like eating anything. You can't just consume food. And I mean, yesterday I was lucky enough to take my first shower maybe in 10 days. I haven't seen my wife and kids for more than a week now, although they don't live far from here. I mean, it will take me 15 to 20 minutes walk to get there. They're living with friends, but to make that trip, you're actually gambling. It's like going to the casino, because every time I go or I come back, I mean, I was lucky that the rockets didn't hit me, but every time I reach the hospital, my son would call me, "Dad, are you okay?" I'm like, "Why are you calling?" He said, "No, the road that you went through now, it was carpet bombed." So I stopped going there. I figured, you know, it's better for me to sleep on the sidewalk on a little mattress rather than taking that trip and risk having my children losing their father. My family have already lost their home. About 12 days ago, I can't even remember, we lost our home. Everything, we lost everything. So I don't want them to lose their father. That's it.
All right, Ashraf, thanks, man. Stay safe there, pal. Talk to you soon. Ashraf, Shannon there joining us from Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah, says it's targeted at three Israeli bases with precision-guided munitions. In a statement, Hezbollah said strikes took place in Kafr Shuba and Shabwa Farms region, said all the strikes hit designated targets. This came after Israel carried out attacks on southern Lebanon. Areas witnessed an exchange of fire since 8th of October, day after major Palestinian operation against Israel. Recent clashes between Israeli forces and Hezbollah fighters have left over a dozen people dead. Earlier on a Friday, Israel said it will evacuate the town of Kiryat Shemona near the Lebanese border. According to the Gazan Health Ministry, over 7 hospitals are now out of service in the besieged enclave. 46 medical staff members have been killed. Meanwhile, people throughout the world have held demonstrations in a show of support for Palestinians in Gaza. Pro-Palestinian protesters in Yemen took to the streets of the capital, Sana'a, condemning Israel for its crimes and calling for international action to stop onslaught in Gaza. People in Baghdad held a rally as well, slamming Washington's support for Tel Aviv. Protesters in Morocco also expressed solidarity with Palestinians. Iranians filled the streets in a number of cities, including the capital, Tehran, and the holy city of Mashhad. Similar rallies were held in dozens of other cities throughout the world, with demonstrators demanding an immediate end to the Gaza siege and a stop to the aggression.
Pakistan has dispatched a 100-ton aid package to Gaza, which is reeling from Israel's relentless bombing. The humanitarian assistance includes medicine, tents, and blankets, which has been sent to Egypt through a chartered aircraft late on Thursday. According to Pakistan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, the supplies will then be transferred to the people of Gaza from Egypt.
Israel's actions violate international humanitarian and human rights law. Deliberate attacks against civilian targets constitute war crimes and crimes against humanity. We call for an immediate ceasefire, an end to the siege of Gaza, and the facilitation of humanitarian corridors for unrestricted relief supplies.
Meanwhile, in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people, Pakistani President Arif Alvi visited the Palestinian embassy in Islamabad and met with its ambassador, Ahmad Jawad Rabbai. The president assured the Palestinian envoy that Islamabad will continue its unconditional moral and diplomatic support for the people of Palestine.
We condemn what the brutalities which are happening in Gaza. We condemn the disproportionate reaction which Israel has always done. We condemn the apartheid which has stood there for the last 30, 40 years. We condemn the fact that people are being brutalized, people are being killed. In fact, the Al-Ahli hospital in Gaza was demolished and more than 500 people died there.
Meanwhile, protest against Israeli aggression continues in Pakistan as thousands of people took to the streets to condemn the ongoing violence in the Gaza Strip.
Pakistan's decision to help Palestine despite facing international pressures demonstrates its moral commitment to the welfare and self-determination of the Palestinian people. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Press TV has interviewed a number of Pakistani protesters about their take on Israel's relentless onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip.
Whatever happening in Palestine and Gaza is ethnic cleansing. It is genocide. They are bombing hospitals. They are bombing refugee camps. They are bombing the points that are receiving the aids. What do you think? This is defense. This is clear murder. They are killing people so they can take over Gaza. The same way they took over Nakba. And we all need to stand up. If you think raising Voice of Palestine does nothing, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but it does.
We need to think seriously about it, and we need to focus on freeing Palestine now, because it's enough and we should not wait anymore.
Bombing should stop immediately, and the Palestinians who are injured and families displaced should get support and aid immediately.
U.S. President Joe Biden has visited the occupied territories, where he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to discuss ongoing war on Gaza. While many countries around the world have condemned Israeli airstrikes on a Gaza hospital, Biden reiterated Washington's all-out support for the regime.
Since the beginning of the latest spate of violence between Israel and Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip, Western countries, and the U.S. in particular, have voiced their unequivocal support for Israel and ignored the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. The U.S. President Joe Biden visited Israel on Wednesday amid an intensified Israeli campaign of airstrikes on Gaza, the most densely populated strip of land in the world, which has killed thousands of Palestinians, injuring over 13,000. Biden has unequivocally defended the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in the coastal Gaza Strip. Biden said Washington would provide the embattled regime with everything it needed to, quote, defend itself.
For decades, we've ensured Israel's qualitative military edge. And later this week, I'm going to ask the United States Congress for an unprecedented support package for Israel's defense.
The U.S. president promised to ask Congress for an unprecedented military aid package for Israel to assist its ongoing war on Gaza. Reports indicated that Biden was considering a supplemental request of about $10 billion for Israel. It is now feared that the U.S. President Joe Biden's unflinching backing of Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip could give the Tel Aviv regime the green light to commit mass atrocities and genocide against the people of Palestine. It is now reported that Joe Biden has told the Israeli Prime Minister that Washington is fully in support of Tel Aviv's plans to launch a ground invasion of the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier this week, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, highlighted the role of the U.S. in Israel's ongoing atrocities against the Palestinian people. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that numerous pieces of information suggest that the U.S. is formulating the current policy within the Zionist regime.
That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
رو هدایت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
The gruesome murder of a 6-year-old Palestinian Muslim boy in the U.S. state of Illinois by his landlord, who also critically wounded his mother, came days after U.S. media and politicians peddled lies about the Zionist children being beheaded by Palestinians. To support their blatant pro-Israel bias, mainstream Western media, led by the CNN News Network, began pushing a coordinated disinformation campaign, particularly against the Hamas resistance group. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted Joseph Kazuba, a 71-year-old white supremacist Islamophobe from Plainfield, stabbed Wadi Al-Fayyum 26 times recently and seriously wounded his mother because they were Muslims. The slain boy's mother, Hanan Shahin, 32, was reportedly stabbed more than a dozen times and is currently battling for her life in the intensive care unit of a local hospital. Both victims in this brutal attack were targeted by the suspect due to them being Muslim, and the ongoing Middle Eastern conflict involving Hamas and Israelis, Will County Sheriff's Office said in a statement referring to the Israeli regime's genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CAIR, a Washington-based Muslim civil rights and advocacy group, shared text messages sent by Wadi's mother to his father. According to the group, when the woman opened the door, the hate-spewing landlord attempted to choke her first and then immediately stabbed her, yelling, "You Muslims must die." The mother frantically ran to the bathroom to call police, and in the blink of an eye, she found that the 71-year-old man had also stabbed her 6-year-old son. She wrote in a text, "It all happened in seconds." At a news conference recently, Ahmad Rahab, the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, said the family did not see it coming, as Kazuba previously shared a good relationship with his Muslim tenants, even building a treehouse for Wadi, bringing him toys and allowing him to swim in a makeshift pool. But he was incensed by the news regarding developments in the Gaza Strip. Rahab said, connecting the dots between the Muslim boy's gruesome murder and the disinformation campaign about Palestine. Palestinian resistance group Hamas launched the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, also known as Al-Aqsa Flood, on October 7 and broke through the Zionist regime's much-hyped security systems following the recurrent desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the rising tide of violence against Palestinians. The Zionist regime responded with indiscriminate bombing of the densely populated coastal strip, targeting civilians and flattening Gaza's infrastructure, not even sparing hospitals and homes. The Zionist regime's genocidal campaign was accompanied by rampant disinformation that sought to demonize and dehumanize Palestinians and legitimize the unprecedented military action against them. To support their blatant pro-Israel bias, mainstream Western media led by the CNN News Network began pushing a coordinated disinformation campaign, particularly against the Hamas resistance movement. Social media platforms such as Elon Musk's X have also been awash with false and misleading posts and fake footage of past events linking them with what's unfolding in the occupied territories. One of them was the fabricated news of 40 babies beheaded by Hamas resistance fighters. The hoax circulated on social media networks at a dizzying pace and was amplified by prominent Western politicians and social media influencers, including U.S. President Joe Biden. On October 10th, Nicole Zedek, a journalist for Israeli regime news channel I-24, in a live broadcast from Kfar Aza kibbutz near the Gaza border, claimed that an Israeli soldier had told her they witnessed bodies of babies with their heads cut off. The Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesperson Tal Heinrich repeated the unverified claim, even though the I-24 correspondent had failed to provide evidence to back her claim. CNN said Heinrich had confirmed the report of beheaded babies and quoted another Israeli regime military official as saying that he had never seen anything like this in his military career. U.S. President Joe Biden also jumped on the bandwagon and irresponsibility amplified the unverified claim, saying he had seen pictures of the mutilated infants. He said in his remarks, joining the disinformation crusade of the Zionist regime, I never really thought that I would see and have confirmed pictures of terrorists beheading children. The White House had to walk back Biden's claims. It announced that the U.S. president had not in fact seen any images, but his comments were based on news reports and claims by the Zionist regime officials. Without any clinching evidence, the false claims of children being beheaded and women being raped made headlines and were used to justify the Zionist regime's horrendous war crimes and collective punishment of civilians in Gaza. The Western media, biased in favor of the Zionist regime, have resorted to one-sided narratives by amplifying unsubstantiated claims, manipulating the truth and fueling anti-Muslim hate crimes. The incident in Illinois is directly connected to lies peddled by the Western media and political leaders such as Biden, so they are directly complicit in the cold-blooded murder of 6-year-old Wadi. The Zionist regime's decades-long occupation of Palestine, unrelenting persecution of Palestinians, and the regime's project of settler colonialism have rarely been evaluated critically by Western media. In the wake of Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, Westerners have become obsessed with condemning Hamas, while the Zionist regime's actions over the past several decades have been conveniently ignored. Hamas is a resistance movement that is fighting for the rights of Palestinians and for the liberation of occupied territories. The operation they launched has to be seen in the context of what has been unfolding in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank in recent years. The Zionist disinformation project, promoted by the Western media, is aimed at deflecting attention from real truth, the truth of who is the oppressor and who is the oppressed.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Through the eyes of Israeli soldiers. Part 2.
I didn't see any innocent Palestinians in my army service.
We want to know more about what Israeli soldiers have to tell, about their rules of engagement, the truth behind the occupation. And for that, we move to Tel Aviv. In a non-disclosed location, there is a small office. The exact location will not be disclosed for security reasons. Here, we are going to meet former soldiers of the Israeli military forces, members of an organization that defies the occupation, breaking the silence.
My name is Yehuda Shaul. I grew up in what you would call the political right in Israel. I was an infantry combat soldier and a commander. I finished my service as a company sergeant. My sisters are settlers. One of my brothers is a settler today. Even though I grew up in the political right, I found myself in a place where I couldn't justify any more 90% of actions I took part in.
But after serving Israeli military forces as a combat soldier, he decided to do something that changed his life forever. He was the first Israeli soldier to tell the truth about the occupation of Palestine.
I really hope that I'll see the end of the occupation. The first real place I was deployed was Hebron. The second I arrived in Hebron, I started having doubts.
December 2016. The United Nations Security Council approves Resolution 2334. It reaffirms that Israeli settlements in Palestinian land are illegal and a violation of the international law. A few weeks later, with Donald Trump already in the White House, Israel announces the expansion of the West Bank settlements.
Between the United States and the state of Israel.
It means more settlers to add to the 600,000 that are now living in Palestinian land.
In the occupied territories in general, you basically have two communities, Palestinians and settlers. These two communities do not have the same rights. Palestinians are under military law, enforced by the army, and settlers are under Israeli civilian law, enforced by the Israeli police. So I arrived to Hebron, and my mission is to protect the settlers.
They come from all over the world, invited by Jewish organizations and travel agencies working for the settlers' cause.
I come from Los Angeles. I flew 15 hours yesterday to come show support for Israel.
Heavily guarded by Israeli soldiers, every tour of hate contributes to putting more pressure on Palestinians. On the days of the tours, Palestinians are with a gun at their heads, sieged inside their houses, while settlers explain to the tourists how they conquered the land. The first advice to the tourists is, keep away from the Palestinians or you will be killed. Settlers create hate tourism. The goal? Bring more settlers to set down in Palestinian land.
I'm 30 years old and I served in a special unit called Dubdavan, specialized in counter-terror inside the West Bank specifically. Now, what's special about my unit is that it does undercover operations.
For at least half an hour, four men had been throwing stones at Israeli soldiers. But in a matter of seconds, they pulled out their guns, opening fire at the group of protesters.
We have soldiers, fighters, that know how to assimilate within the Palestinian society. They speak Arab, they dress as Arab.
The four men are, in fact, Israeli soldiers disguised as Palestinian. They are known as Mustarabim, an Arabic term that literally means Arab pretenders, infiltrators among Palestinians to carry out military missions.
With that ability, we're able to specific missions from kidnapping or stopping all kind of terrorists or wanted to complicated and even classified operations.
They also carry out selective executions. It was 12th of November 2015. About two dozen men wearing bulky jackets barged into a Palestinian hospital, pushing what appeared to be a pregnant woman in a wheelchair. But they were not heading to the delivery ward. The people caught on the hospital were, in fact, undercover Israeli officers. About 10 minutes later, the Israelis were on their way out, leaving behind a Palestinian man dead and taking his cousin with them.
And I remember really clearly, they divide us into two groups, and we're standing one in front of another. And then they told us, you need to imagine that you're going into the field. They're a Palestinian, a terrorist. He's gonna shoot your mom, rape your sister, and he's gonna kill your little brother. And right before you go in, this is how you need to be in your mind.
I'll just give you one example. What we call in the IDF, making our presence felt. We start night shift patrol, 10 o'clock till 6 o'clock in the morning, 8-hour shift. We walk in the streets, bump into a house. It's a random house. The sergeant, the officer who leads the patrol, chooses these houses. Wake up the family.
Now it's the middle of the night, around 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. We have our weapon. Our face is covered with colors, so we would be intimidating.
Lock them in one room. Separate men from women, search the place. You can yourself imagine the dynamics, what happens when a military unit bumps into your house, 2 o'clock at night.
We knock on the door, the head of the family opens the door. The first time we realize this is a family we're going into.
Knock on some doors, make some noise, throw some shock grenades. Run to the other corner of the street, invade another random house. Wake up the next family.
Open all the doors, open all the lights, open all the windows. Wake up all your family and bring them here to the living room. We need to question you.
Search the place, you know, climb on the roof, jump from one roof to another, go down through the balcony, wake up the next house.
It's really exciting on one point because this is the first time you're out there. On the other hand, this is not exactly the war zone that I was looking for or I was really anticipating for.
And that's basically how you pass here at Al-Sha. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. From September 2000, when the second Intifada started, till today, it didn't stop for 1 second.
I remember one of the main operations that I've done. It was this big operation. We were all very proud of it. We decided we need to do a thing called a hot operation. Get into a house. We were blowing up the door with explosives. And the guy with the explosives put explosives on the door. And he put a little bit more. And we go and we hide on the corner. And 3, 2, 1, and huge boom. went off. I really remember it. And also, seeing it later on the camera. And right after the boom, we quickly go inside. Looks like the house was picking up in the air and thrown down. All the windows were broken. The doors were torn. And we quickly find the guy. We take him outside. We put him against the wall. And there's something really weird. The guy doesn't look like the guy that we're looking for. The house doesn't exactly look like the house that was supposed to break in. Then we notice we blew up the wrong house. And we go out to the next corner, find the right house, and continue the mission.
Almost on a weekly basis, I would sit down with my soldiers and talk about values and morality. I remember one Thursday, you know, you just finished sitting down talking about values and then you start a patrol and you walk in the streets of the old city and suddenly we see a suspicious bag in the side of the road. Could be a bomb. Could be garbage. Both happen. What do? We grab the first random Palestinian and send him to pick it up. If it's a bomb, it would explode. If not, we continue. 2 hours ago, we spoke about the equality of human life and how every human being. And now we just proved that the life of a random Palestinian in the street is worth less than what? One bullet of an M16 that we can shoot it and check whether it's a bomb or not? 20 minutes waiting for a bomb, you know, engineer? What is obvious for me is that protecting Israel from terrorism is a very small part of what we do. What we mainly do in the occupied territories, it's about making sure Palestinians will never be free.
We are going back to Jerusalem Al-Quds to meet a so-called NGO. They call themselves My Truth, and the organization was born in the social media.
Controversy is being stirred up in Israel involving one of the country's most polarizing activist groups.
They stand for the values of Zionism, and their goal, tell the truth about the occupation of Palestine. But their truth denies any violation of human rights, killings, or even the occupation. Their members are veterans of the Israeli military forces and were created to fight breaking the silence.
My name is Lior Shahab. I've served in the IDF. I'm also part of an organization called My Truth.
My name is Ben. I served in the IDF. My Truth was open up and direct response to breaking the silence.
My name is Eitan Meir. I'm the International Relations Coordinator for Im Tirtzu. I was born and raised in New Jersey in the United States, and I immigrated to Israel in 2008. Im Tirtzu, it's a non-governmental organization, and its goals are simple, to promote and advance Zionist values in Israel.
Do you think breaking the silence are traitors?
Breaking the silence gets millions and millions of shekels, foreign governmental entities in Europe, Denmark, Holland, Spain, even Germany, France. I don't know what their ultimate goal is in breaking the silence and all these other organizations that receive funding from foreign European governments in order to defame and delegitimize the State of Israel. I look at their actions, and their actions are 100% anti-Israel.
How do you feel when the Minister of Defense say that you are traitors?
Just say,
Moshe Ya'alon, the former Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, says openly that Breaking the Silence is an organization of traitors and that they were banned from all military events. Lieutenant General Moshe Ya'alon, Defense Minister of Israel, after all the controversy and war crimes committed under his orders during the last operation in Gaza, he says, I can still look at myself in the mirror.
I can look to myself in the mirror.
About the cases open in several civil courts across the world, he has an explanation. The world is lying.
When the Minister of Defense calls you a traitor and a spy, people on the street respond to this incitement, and then our office gets physically attacked once. Our activists get physically attacked twice on campuses. And right-wing bullies published phone number of the grandparents of our executive director, and they've been getting calls in the middle of the night. Your granddaughter was in a car accident. She's dead. She's in the hospital. Yeah? It's becoming very filthy. What we see in the last few years is more and more attempts by the government to try to silence anyone who speaks out about the occupation.
This is the website of Breaking the Silence. Here you can find hundreds of testimonies of soldiers that served the occupation in Gaza and the West Bank. they tell about crimes committed against the Palestinians. Abuse, assassinations, bribery, confirmation of killings, deaths. Everything documented with place, date, and names.
Also, a lot of times they find that, you know, with breaking the silence, a lot of their stories are not true. And you have the commanders of these soldiers coming and saying, hey, I was there. That's not how it played out. What are you talking about?
Breaking the silence, it felt bad for me to see how they act.
I was there. I served in the army. I was in very difficult situations in the Golani Brigade. And these things breaking the silence says did not happen. They either did not happen or exaggerated. And they certainly do not reflect the general doctrine of the IDF. So when you have Israelis going abroad and slandering the country, how could you expect the people of Europe to think otherwise?
Videos show testimonies of the soldiers who are members of the right-wing organization My Truth. These testimonies deny every single accusation made by breaking the silence. My Truth is trying to fight against the rising support that breaking the silence is achieving around the world, among human rights organizations, but also governments.
There is a settler NGO financed by the Israeli government sending spies undercover into activist groups and human rights organizations to try to spread paranoia, and it's kind of like a Stasi-type behavior. They try to send us people who will give us false testimony so we will publish and lose our credibility. They send two guys undercover to our activists, becoming friends with people, embraced by people, being brought into the homes of people, while everything is recorded from hidden cameras. They sent a guy to give us state secrets about classified operations behind enemy lines in Syria so they can initiate a security investigation against them. Now, our researcher sits down with this guy, and during the interview, he insists 4 or 5 times to talk about Syria. And our researcher tells him, we're not interested in Syria. Let's move on, go back to the West Bank and Gaza. And right away, we sent this interview to the Israeli military censorship. And later on, we were able to confirm that the guy was a mole, was a spy for the settler organization. Then we released it to the media. You have a settler organization with Israeli government funding sending a soldier to breach national security laws to give a state secret so they can initiate an investigation against us. It's the opposite of anything that makes sense. That's how far the Israeli political right has gone to try to silence anyone who speaks out against the anti-Jew.
Breaking the silence, you have to realize this is the credible minority of it, and in those cases that they are found to do it, there are laws. And
it's mostly because soldiers are afraid to join breaking the silence.
Anyone that's been to Israel, and I encourage all the viewers to do so, will realize that Israelis are the last people, I would say, have a problem about speaking their mind.
Do you think there are many soldiers desiring to speak out inside the IDF? They are afraid to?
Yeah, what we know is that the Israeli government is trying to do many different things to try to make sure that soldiers will not speak out. For example, they're now taking us to court to force us to expose the identity of soldiers who served in Gaza in 2014 and testify to us so they can throw them to prison.
Every day during that operation, between 1 to 3 in the afternoon, the IDF had something called a humanitarian ceasefire to allow the local population in Gaza to go out, get the food they need, visit, you know, their relatives, breathe some fresh air. When you go to an organization like Hamas, unfortunately, that was the time when they would shoot the most rockets. We decided not to do anything because we decided it was a ceasefire, and we just allowed them to keep firing rockets, putting, you know, Palestinians on top of the Israelis.
Gaza is the most heavily populated enclave on the globe. 1.8 million people, and more than 1 million are refugees that before 1948 lived in what is now the occupation. This strip of land is, in fact, a huge refugee camp, but also an open-air prison, sieged by Israel by land, sea, and air. Last Israeli aggression on Gaza lasted 50 days of intensive bombings. Entire neighborhoods were reduced to rubble. Operation Protective Edge, as it was called by Israel, continued for 7 weeks, leaving behind around 3,000 deaths and around 500,000 Gazans displaced. And if it continues, experts believe, Gaza will become a place where no humans can live.
I would say the findings that we have after interviewing today over 80, not over 90, soldiers and officers who served in Operation Protective Edge is that the massive amount of civilian casualties, over 1,000 civilians, over 500 children, the massive amount of destruction of infrastructure, of civilian infrastructure. Yeah, about 18,000 apartments destroyed. It's not a coincidence. It's a direct result of two new doctrines that the IDF has adopted that shaped the way this operation was conducted, led to this destruction that we left behind. One sentence of four words that every Israeli combat soldier grows on. Yesh safek, en safek. When there is doubt, there is no doubt. If you're in a situation of doubt, you're not sure what the rules of engagement are, you don't see clear the target, the orders are to shoot to the knees and the bottom, and you're afraid you're going to hit the stomach, you have no doubt. You don't pull the trigger. Because once you pull the trigger, there is no way back. In Gaza, the same sentence was used, exactly the opposite. There is doubt, there is no doubt. If you have doubt, if you're not sure, pull the trigger, because we prefer the mistakes to be at the expense of the other side.
You know, we don't have any red lines anymore for our security. Don't we stop somewhere and say, am I going to do this in the name of the security, really? You might say it's security. But I know that this is not my value.
The problem is the occupation. Any army in the world that will get the order to go and occupy another people forever will behave this way. And the only way you can do this is if you don't see Palestinians as equal human beings to you. Because to an equal human being to you, you just don't do this. That is immoral. And it's because the mission is immoral, our behavior was immoral. The problem is the political mission the army is sent to carry out. Hence, the solution is ending the occupation, is changing the political mission the army is sent to carry out.
In the limelight.
European gas prices have surged to six-month high. Mounting fears of energy supply shortages have jolted markets. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, natural gas futures in Western Europe jumped by a further 5% recently, climbing to the highest level since early April, according to data from the London Intercontinental Exchange, ICE. The cost of gas futures for November delivery at the Tidal Transfer Facility, TTF hub, in the Netherlands surged to an interday high of 56.1 euros, per megawatt hour in household terms during morning trade, or over $617 per 1,000 cubic meters, the highest level in 8 months. Since last week, the continent's benchmark futures prices have jumped by more than 54%. Analysts have also cited the suspected sabotage of a Baltic Sea pipeline between Finland and Estonia, planned workers' strikes at key export plants in Australia, and the approaching winter in Europe. Euronews also wrote, natural gas prices in Europe have been climbing over the past week as recent world events bring uncertainty to the market. European natural gas prices are displaying increased uncertainty, with investors placing higher bets for the upcoming month due to growing concerns about Chevron's operations in the occupied territories and Australia, which are casting a long shadow over the market outlook. European natural gas benchmark Dutch TTF's price was up by more than 10% compared to last week and more than 38% compared to last month as of 11 CET recently. The price for a November 2023 delivery was close to 50 euros per megawatt hour, the highest since April, following a 15% surge amid increasing supply concerns. At the same time, workers at Chevron Corporation liquefied natural gas facilities in Australia were reportedly planning to resume strikes. According to Financial Times, threats of a strike action by Australian workers at liquefied natural gas facilities operated by U.S. major Chevron are also adding to global supply concerns. The dispute has underscored how European prices are increasingly affected by the global LNG market as it weans itself off cheap Russian gas. Workers are in a dispute with Chevron over pay conditions at the Gorgon and Wheatstone facilities, which account for